Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we have the privilege to be joined by Rabbi Noah Marlowe, and we're going to be talking about whether a single Ashkenazi man can, should be wearing a talis gadol during davening. Rabbi Noah Marlowe, a native of Stamford, Connecticut, is in his second year serving as the Orthodox rabbi at Harvard Hillel and as a Harvard University chaplain. Before arriving at Hillel, Noah worked as a rabbinic intern at YIOZ, the Young Israel of
Ohab Tzedek
in Riverdale, New York, and as a Beit Midrash fellow at SAR High School. Rabbi Marlowe earned his bachelor's in psychology, master of Jewish education, certificate in mental health counseling, and smicha at Yeshiva University. He has studied at Yeshiva HaKotel, the Gris Kol, and Yeshiva Har Etzion. Rabbi Marlowe, at the time of recording, there is an upheaval I know going on at Harvard, and so I am especially grateful for you for taking a break from all the crazy politics on campus and spending time doing what I think we're most passionate about, which is our Torah study. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today, and I think the tshuva we're studying today, you're going to be sharing, is from Aseh Lecha Rav. I was wondering, before we even jump into the tshuva, I'd love to hear about Aseh Lecha Rav, just who wrote it, what's the nature of the tshuva. But even before getting to that, I always like to ask my guests why you chose this tshuva in particular.
Yeah, thank you, Rabbi Kurtz. I'm excited to be here. And as you said, it's been a crazy time on campus, and it's wonderful to be able to talk Torah together. So the question that was posed to Sir Chaim David Halevi, who's the author of Aseh Lecha Rav, it was a question by a father of a 12-year-old boy who wanted to know if his son, who's Ashkenazi of Polish descent, could wear a talis, as his friends in his school were beginning to wear a talis. They were of Sephardic origin. And so he wanted to know, despite the fact that the custom of his family was to not wear a talis until he was married, could his son wear a talis in tefillah in school in order to fit in? So that was the question that Rav Halevi was asked. And I have two personal connections to this question. The first was when I was in the Gros Kollel 3 years ago. I was preparing for my rabbinic internship. And the question arose, should I wear a talis as a rabbinic intern, as a single rabbinic intern? And on the one hand, I think that wearing a talis conveys a certain kavod harav, a certain gravitas. There's a certain reverence that people greet you with when you have a talis, when a rabbi in particular has a talis. On the other hand, the predominant Ashkenazi minhag, the one that I grew up with, is not to wear a talis until I'm married. So at that point, I started to explore this topic, and that was really my first connection to it. And I'll just throw another fun Gris fact at you. So when I was in the Gris Kol, I was part of a class called PSAK for non-poskim. Mm-hmm. And this class was taught by Rav Daniel Mann. And basically each week, a different student in the class would get a question that Rav Mann was asked. He's a posig and a dayan. And they were required to research that question on their own, to present it to the class. And then Rav Mann would share his perspective and his answer as a dayan. So
he's Eretz Chemda, right?
Eretz Chemda, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so it was within this framework that I began exploring this question, and I gave the first shiur there. And then my second connection is that, and for the last bunch of years, I've been involved as an advocate for single people in the modern Orthodox community, and trying to speak up and to share and enlighten others about the experience of those who are single in the modern Orthodox community. There are sometimes challenges in the experience of those who are single. And one area in which this is manifest is the question of shul, of a single person going, a single man going home, for example, to their home shul for Rosh Hashanah, and they're 30 years old and they're highly educated. They went to Harvard Law School. They work at Paul Weiss. They work at a prestigious law firm, and they're home, and they're sitting, you know, to the left of them is their 20-year-old brother who's is a student at YU, still in college, recently married. He's still learning how to fold his talis. To the right of him, you know, is you know, our, you know, children who are 9 and 12 years old, and he's enveloped in this sea of talisim, of people around him who are all wearing, men around him who are all wearing talises. And he feels strange. He feels weird. He feels odd. He feels deviant that he's the one person in the crowd, or the one man in the crowd who's not wearing a talis. And even his younger brother is wearing a talis, and he feels, you know, despite the fact that he's accomplished so much, he doesn't feel, you know, as much as a sense of belonging in the community. You know, so I've been thinking about this question of, you know, can single men wear talisim, despite the fact that that's, you know, against the prevalent minhag of Ashkenazing men.
Right. So you're saying that the predominant minhag in Ashkenaz, though, I guess we'll talk about actual Ashkenaz and Yekis, which ironically take a different approach toward this. You'll talk about that, I'm sure. But the predominant minhag is that Ashkenazi men, broadly speaking, do not wear a talis until they're married. And so even if this was not the original intention, we'll talk, I guess you'll share with us in the tshuva what the original intention in this distinction was, because it's an odd thing to start a mitzvah once you get married, if it's a mitzvah to do it, but it's become a status symbol. And whether we like it or not, we see someone wearing it, because I guess many people tend to get married as they reach adulthood, though of course that's not the same case for everybody. It has morphed into kind of this social symbol for adulthood. And so for someone who is a full adult and has all the accomplishments and is more of an adult than his little brother in YU who just happened to get married before him, it could really take a psychological toll, and you don't get the you're not treated the way that you deserve to be treated. So the question I suppose you're asking is that what is the reason for this minhag that one only wears a talis once they get married? And once we understand that, I guess we could discuss if it is appropriate to make dispensations for situations like you're describing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Wow. So this is a very, I'm sure, personal topic. And also it's a very good halachic topic to explore as well. I've never really given much thought to this. So I'm looking to learning from you. So what do we got to know about this?
Okay, so let's talk about Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, who's the author of Aseilah HaRav, before we jump into the tshuva. So Rav Halevi, he was born in 1924 in Yerushalayim. He died in 1998. He was a great Sephardic posek. He was a student and a protege of Rav Ben Zion Uziel. He fought, he was part of the army in 1948 in the War of Independence. He was a great scholar. He won the Pras Yisrael, the Israel Prize, and the Rav Kook Prize for his Talmudic erudition, his halachic erudition. And one of the things that he did in his halachic works is he confronted a lot of issues of halacha and society, and how Israelis needed to navigate new dimensions of society that halacha never really thought too much about. For example, the army, when Jews lived in Galus. So that's one of the hallmarks, I guess, of his tshuvot. Aseilah HaRav is a 9-volume work. He actually has another set of halachic works called Mekor Chaim, which is kind of like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, written in modern Hebrew. I would say Panini Halacha is probably the work that surpassed Mekor Chaim. You know, it's hard. Rav Melamed is where it's at, you know, so
I think they tried to make like a more, I don't know if right wing is the right term, right wing religiously, more religiously exactly. Conservative knockoff of Panini Halacha recently. So people are trying to, but you can't beat him.
You can't beat him. He's the best.
Yeah. So he wrote Mekor Chaim. So he seems to have put out a lot of important literature.
Wrote a lot of important literature, and he was the Rishon. He was the chief rabbi of Rishon Tzion, and also was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, succeeding Rav Ovadia Yosef. And that was the role he held onto for the majority of his career.
So this is no lightweight we're dealing with over here. This is a Talmud Chacham par excellence.
Par excellence. Oh, and I'll add one more thing about his tshuvot, What's interesting and notable about them is he often incorporates Ashkenazic sources in Psak into his hachra'ah and his decision-making and deliberation. And I think he also receives questions from Ashkenazim as well. So I think it's interesting. You don't see Rav Moshe Feinstein saying like, and on the other hand, Maran, Harav, and Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch says this, and the Kafachim says this. So therefore, we should pask in this way. So that makes his work a little bit interesting as well.
Right, that you kind of get the gamut of different opinions, though. I think what's interesting that we'll see in this tshuva is that he actually, correct me if I'm wrong, he doesn't talk about German Jewry in his analysis of where he tells him. Can you just tell us briefly what's the minhag for German Jewry?
Yeah, it's very interesting that he doesn't include that in his tshuva, especially because he gives examples of the practice of other communities in this tshuva relating to the Talis. The prevalent practice in German Yaki communities is I'm privileged to have some really wonderful community members in my community who are of Yaki descent is to wear a talis from bar mitzvah time and onward, and not like the rest of Ashkenaz to wait until one's married to wear a talis.
Yeah, so it's almost like whenever we say the Ashkenazi minhag, I mean this is the real Ashkenazi minhag. So it's kind of funny how that works out that way. But okay, so what's his break it down for us? What's his overview of the issue that we have to know?
Okay. So in essence, there are two different texts, two different psakim that Rav Halevi is contending with. The first is the drashot of the Maharil, and we'll get more into that in a second. And the second is a comment of the Magen Avram on Orach Chaim. These are the two. These are the two main issues that Rav Halevi deals with. And actually, just take one step back. The tshuva, since the context is about a bar mitzvah boy, the first half of the tshuva speaks about and discusses the mitzvah of chinuch of a father to educate and initiate his son into the halachic tradition. And so we're not going to talk about that, but that's the first part of the tshuva. And then the second part of the tshuva deals with the minhag of Ashkenaz of single men not wearing a talis until they're married. So he begins with the Maharil. The Maharil is one of the great Ashkenazi poskim, who much of our Ashkenazi practice follows from his psakim, and he records a practice of Ashkenazi men not wearing a talis until they're married. Now, I just want to take one step back here. The Torah tells us about the mitzvah of tzitzis, and it doesn't tell us all of the parameters of the halachot of tzitzis. And so the Gemara in Torah Sheba'al Peh, in Menachot really specifically, the Gemara fleshes out the different dimensions of the mitzvah of tzitzis. And so one of the main questions, or one big central question that the Gemara Menachot asks is the mitzvah of tzitzis a chovat chefza or a chovat gavra? Now you might think, oh, this is contemporary Brisker terminology. The Gemara doesn't use, the Gemara does use the language of of gavra and mana of object. So the Gemara really is using this conceptual thinking. So for those who make the claim that brisk is a the brisker derech is a break in tradition, it's not true. There's a lot of precedent for it. But the question is the obligation of tzitzis on the individual or on the object? Is it on the gavra or the chefza? So what's the practical difference? So one obvious practical difference is in an era where we no longer wear four-cornered garments, which is the requirement for tzitzis. You have to put tassels. I love that word, tassels. You have to put tassels on any four-cornered garment. That's the halakhic obligation. So in a society in which four-cornered garments are no longer the norm, do you still have an obligation to wear tzitzis? So according to the Chovat Gavra perspective, that the obligation is on the individual, of course you'd still have to wear tzitzis because you as an individual are still obligated. By contrast, if the obligation is on the chefza, if it's on the object, well, there's no need for me to have tzitzis because my clothing does not have four garments. So from that perspective, one would be exempt from wearing tzitzis in contemporary times. Right. So in fact, the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, paskins like the position of chovat chefza, that one is not obligated, it's an obligation on the object. Nonetheless, it's important to still wear a talit katan, to wear a small tzitzis, that we typically wear under our clothing. But he notes that it's proper that at the very least we should wear tzitzit Bishat Tfilah, at the time of davening, which I think is where the practice of wearing talisim or talitot, we'll go back and forth between these, comes from, right? So at the very least, it seems from the Shulchan Aruch that you're supposed to wear, a talis gadol during davening. And from the context of the Shulchan Aruch, it seems pretty clear there that he's not referring to a talis katan, that you should only wear a talis katan at davening. It seems to be that you're supposed to wear that the whole day, and the talis gadol is reserved for davening. So at the Shulchan Aruch, We don't have any indication that there would be a distinction between single and married men, right? Mm-hmm. So that brings us to the Maharil. So the Maharil records this practice that single men shouldn't wear a talis, and it's based on an interesting drasha. The drasha is, the Torah says in Devarim, Gidilim Taselach, that you should make tassels for yourself. And then the very next pasuk is, Ki kach ish isha, when a man takes a woman as his wife. And so the drasha, the inference from this juxtaposition of gedilim in kikach, is that you shouldn't, a single man shouldn't wear a talis until he gets married. Hmm. Right? So that's this interesting drasha.
So he's introducing a drasha, like a smicha of the psukim. That's not in the Gemara, you're saying.
Exactly. So what's so bizarre about this drasha, I like to call it a phantom drasha. It's not in Gemara. It's not in Midrashei Halacha. It first comes up in these Ashkenazic Rishonim. And it has a very similar stylistic, a dimension to it, right? We're familiar, the Gemara does this all the time. Probably the most famous occurrence is the drasha about Nazir and Sota, of the placement of the parsha of Nazir and Sota, that the Gemara says, why are Nazir and Sota, juxtaposed? And the answer is, anybody who sees a Sota in her kilkula and her degradation, they should immediately take a vow of Nizirut to abstain from drinking wine, because that type, out drinking alcohol leads to that type of frivolous and deviant behavior. Right, so we're familiar with that type of drasha, and in fact, there's one Rishon who in formulating this minhag actually uses that type of language of nismicha. So I think that tries to give it more authority, more staying power, that it's a legitimate drasha. But it's strange,
Right. It's one thing if, you get up on a Shabbos morning and you're giving a sermon, and then you suggest on your own that I think there's some inspirational connection of talis and marriage, and therefore, I don't know, insert whatever the message is from there. But here he's actually inferring normative halachic practice. And I think in the next line in the tshuva, he's quoting from the Maharil, he says, "Yom chatzna adif legabi bachar mikol regel," because, you should save it for some sort of occasion, and what greater occasion than one's chatzna? Which is very odd that we would, do you wait to wear tefillin until now, as you mentioned, there is no formal obligation on the gaver to go after finding talis, but nonetheless, if you have an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah, I would say, why give up all those years that you could be fulfilling this mitzvah voluntarily? It's just such an odd thing to delay for so long, especially, maybe they got married a little bit earlier or 18 back in the day, but still, it's still a huge, you're missing a few years of fulfilling this mitzvah, potentially.
Absolutely. It's so strange. And if you look at other contemporaneous Ashkenazic Rishonim, this that you see in the Rokeach, the Orchot Chaim, the Sefer Amanig, and the Tashbetz. The Tashbetz is the origin, the earliest source that talks about this minhag. There are different variations of this minhag. So there's one minhag that the bride presents the groom with a talis at the chuppah. There's one minhag that the chuppah is made of a talis. There's one minhag that the chatan and kala are surrounded by a talis, under the chuppah, which I think has become a more prominent minhag in contemporary times. So, my lefi aniyut dati, my humble opinion, I think this may be an incident these were the facts on the ground. Men weren't wearing a talis until they were married, and there was a really, really creative, sharp, Talmud Chacham that came up with this idea, this juxtaposition, this drasha. And it was meant to substantiate something that was already being practiced. So I don't have any proof for that.
One of those.
But to me, it all indications point toward that.
Right. But it would seem that a lot of people took issue with the Maharil. Well, what were their arguments against him?
Yeah, exactly. So just to move all the way to the present day, the Mishnah Brura, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes the Maharil. And then he cites almost verbatim from the Shayaret Knesset HaGedolah, it's another commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, I am puzzled. How can it be that on account of this drasha, this interesting drasha, that a man will be Yoshev, who be telling me mitzvah tzitzit, he's going to sit and abstain from fulfilling mitzvah tzitzit until he gets married? That doesn't make any sense. That's crazy. This is a drasha that comes out of nowhere. It's not from Chazal. and so we're not going to fulfill a mitzvah aseh on account of this drasha. And so that seems to be one of the major critiques of the Maharil.
What do we say back to that? What's the defense to that argument?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a defense?
Yeah, so there is a defense. And some make the claim that the Shayaret Knesset HaGedolah, who the Mishnah Berurah is quoting, he presupposes that you'll still be wearing a talis katan, right? So you'll still be wearing tzitzis, you just won't be wearing a talis gadol.
So how do we calculate? I know we can't really calculate, you know, your schar points up in Shemayim, but, you know, are you not getting some like extra bonus points for wearing another talis? You know, didn't Rabbi Pinchas Scheinberg wear all those layers of talisim on him? So I always imagine like there's an extra bonus points for more schar with every layer of talisim that you're wearing. No.
Yeah. I mean, in
so
fact,
you're still losing out on something.
Yeah, you know, and actually, it's interesting. There are two different directions to go. One direction is to say, like what Rav Chaim David Halevi says and Rebbe Ovadia Yosef says, which is that even the shear, the size of a talis katan nowadays, is too small to actually fulfill one's obligation.
Ooh.
Right? So they go in that direction and say, you actually can't even according to the Maharil, you can't fulfill your obligation with a talis katan, so you're really not getting any points. You know, so that's kind of like one direction.
Well, so now you're making like so for those who don't wear a talis gadol and then, you know, make the bracha on that and be motzi the talis katan, you're making a bracha levatala potentially.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a whole debate of the Shulchan Aruch, the Sephardic tradition is not to make a bracha on a talis katan. You know, and even the language is a machloket about the language. What bracha do you make? Is it al mitzvah tzitzit, which is the bracha Ashkenazi make, or lehita teif betzitzit, which is what Ashkenazim say when they for a talis gadol. But there's a question that arises, should you make that bracha on a talis katan? Because there's no atifa, you're not actually covering yourself. You know, so one direction is to say you get zero mitzvah points. The other direction is that, and I don't want to go too far into this, is Rav Soloveitchik in Shirim Lezecher Abba Mari gave a Yartzai drasha about Kilayim B'tzitzis, and he has this whole approach where he says that really Talis Gadol is the mitzvah min amuchar, the best way to fulfill one's obligation of tzitzit. He says the Talis Katan is really a minimal aspect of the mitzvah. He says briefly, he says there are two obligations of tzitzis. He says there's the maisa mitzvah that's a kiyum al yidei hagavra. There's the act of the mitzvah which one fulfills as an individual, as a person. And then there's a second fulfillment, which is having your tzitzis have tassels on it, which is that you're the beged of the tzitzit is mitzuyetza. You know, so he for the Rav, it's actually even, you know, there's more significance to wearing a talis gadol. But we'll
Rabbi Marlo, I have to give you so much credit for quoting all this lumbus today on what is such a, you know, short podcast. I appreciate all this. You know, we usually don't get as much lumbus on Shalos and Tshuvos, but it's really, as you said, it's one holistic system. They're not two different things.
Exactly.
One thing I just want to, as we, you know, we're moving forward in our session over here, I want to make sure we cover this point, which I think is something that you definitely want to touch on. Is there a distinction between someone who might be a stam balabas, a stam layman, versus a talmid chacham or rabbi, which you alluded to at the beginning of the session?
Exactly. So, right, the first part of the Rav Halevi's tshuva dealing with this talks about the Maharil. The second part talks about the Magen Avraham. So, the Magen Avraham has a very interesting comment, and I'll read it briefly. He says, Masra b'kiddushin daf chavtet shebachar shelo nasa isha lo haya mechaser rosho b'talit afilu hu talmud chacham. He says it's implied by the Gemara and Kiddushin, and we'll talk about it in just a moment, that a single man, even if he's a talmud chacham, shouldn't cover his head with his talis until he's married, right? And that's the first part of the Magen Avraham. And then he says, somebody who is married but isn't a Talmud Chacham they also shouldn't wear a talis based off of the Gemara and Kiddushin and Daf Chai. So what's very interesting about this Magen Avraham, which people have to contend with, is the Magen Avraham seems to imply that a single person shouldn't cover their head with a talis, and a married person who's not a Talmud Chacham shouldn't cover their head with a talis. This Magen Avraham is used by some as a justification or perhaps even an explanation of the minhag of Ashkenazi men to not wear a talis. Now, they make a leap, right? The Magen Avraham, the simple reading is he's saying you don't cover your head. You're not mechaseh rosho b'talit. But some have inferred that really he means you don't wear a talis at all. And in fact, that's what Rav David Halevi says, right? He says, "Did Rav Magen Avraham garmu af lebacharim shelo yitatfu b'talit ad nisuehem," right? That the Magen Avraham seems to be a precedent for single men to not wear a talis until they're married. And in fact, Rabbi Mordechai Willig, in his Sefer on Mordechai, he has a discussion of single men not wearing a talis. And Rav Willig,
wow.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a different discussion. It's interesting what he includes there is a little bit more lumdish and a little bit more conceptual. He doesn't talk about the Maharil, which I think is very interesting.
Oh, wow.
But he does talk about the Magen Avraham, and there he says that this Magen Avraham seems to be precedent for the minhag, Ashkenazi man to not wear a talis. But there's a problem with the Magen Avraham. The first is his position is tentative, right? He says mashma, right? That's a tentative language. And secondly, he points to this Gemara in Kiddushin, which is disagreed upon by many about how to interpret it. And I think this Gemara is really interesting because it actually talks about this tension of not being married in mitzvot and what it means to live a life as an unmarried, committed Jewish person. So Rabbi Kurtz, with your permission, we'll read the Gemara together, which is very, very short, because I think it's really important. So the Gemara in Kiddushin and Chaf Tanam Bet says, Mishtabech le Rav Chizda le Rav Huna bid Rav Hamnuna. Rav Chizda was praising his student or protege, Rav Hamnuna, to his friend and colleague, Rav Huna. This is beyond difficult to keep together. We're talking about Rav Chizda, Hanuna, and Huna. These are very similar names. So we'll try our best to keep it together. But two colleagues are talking to each other and they're praising a third colleague slash student. To which Amar Le, so Rav Huna says, when this great, your great colleague and student, he's so great, he's an Adam Gadol, he's so great, bring him to me when he's in town. I'd love to meet him. I'd love to talk to him. I'd love to talk and learn. So Gemara tells us, when he finally arrived, when Rav Hamnuna finally arrived, Rav Huna noticed that he wasn't wearing a sudar. Which we typically understand as a cloth. He wasn't literally parasudra. He didn't have a cloth spread over him. We don't know exactly what this means. The Gemara will go further about what exactly this means. So Amarle, so there's an investigation. Rav Huna says to Rav Amnuna, "My time alo prisat sudra. Why aren't you wearing this cloth over your head?" Amarle, "Delo nisivna, because I'm not married."
Ooh.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And Rashi actually says, Rashi comments and he says, Kider Chanesuin Shayu Regilin Lechasot Roshan, that it was actually the norm that married men would cover their head in this way.
So this is just like with an additional covering, or this is like a kippah, like an initial covering.
Exactly. So that's the question of the sugya, which is what are we talking about here? Like, what's this about? And let's just finish the Gemara and then we'll come back to that question because it's one more line. So Rav Huna was so embarrassed, the Gemara tells us, Adrinuhu la'ape, he turned away from Hamnuna in Amar Lein, he said to him, Chazi delo chazit lehu la'ape ad nisaft. You should not come back to me until you're married.
Mm-hmm.
So what we see here is actually a very striking Gemara talking about this Talmud Chacham, this great scholar who's not married, and there's rebuke, there's mussar given to him, like, come on, dude, what's going on? Why aren't you married? So it really does play into, some of the conversation around this, in our communities. But for our purposes, there's a you know, people debate, what is this? What's this Gemara about? So the Magen Avraham seems to be his, this is talking about a talis gadol. You shouldn't wear a talis gadol on your head. That's what the, you know, Derech HaNisun used to be. The people who are married, they wore a talis over their head. But there are many people who disagree. The Beit Yosef, the Be'er Hetiv, Rav Yaakov Emden, and they say, what are you talking about? This is a Sudra Durabanan. This is this was some sort of a garment that was worn for tzniut, for modesty, for humility. And in fact, Rav David Halevi, Chaim David Halevi, he notes in his tshuva that this was the practice of different Sephardic chachamim, that they would have their heads covered, you know, all day long. Mm-hmm. You know, so this, it seems that both in practice and in theory, this Gemara is not talking about a talis. It's just talking about some sort of, you know, additional garment.
Right. But what I think is very important from this whole discussion is that there seems to be something unique about the stature of a Talmid Chacham, that he it's right for him, it's expected of him actually, to have some sort of additional religious flair, if you will. So I guess coming just as we wrap up, coming back to your situation when you were serving as a rabbinic intern and in your rabbinic capacity right now, you see this kind of as the precedent for the rabbinic wearing of a talis, regardless of marital status. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the Magen Avraham is precedent both for a rabbi, for a non-rabbi. You know, I think definitely there is, I think it's precedent for rabbi, for leader. You know, it's interesting. There was somebody, an involved lay person who's single, and he reached out to me. He was running a Yom Nuraim, a minion for Yom Nuraim. He was running Yom Kippur, and he said to me, "It's so weird, you know. I'm like running this whole community. I'm arranging Yom Kippur, but I'm not wearing a talis.
Yeah,
you know. And there's really a tension there of like, on the one hand, I'm leading the community, and you know, I'm showing her I'm a spiritual leader. On the other hand, this is, you know, the practice, you know, this is the minhag, you know. So I would say, kind of just like wrapping up, you know, on this topic, I think, you know, it's pretty clear that the Maharil and Rav Chaim David Halevi's argument is the Maharil doesn't really have a leg to stand on. You know, the really makes most sense to wear a talis, not to abstain from wearing a talis until you're married. The Magen Avraham, I believe, has been either misinterpreted or it's been used as a limud schus, you know, for the practice of Ashkenazic single men not wearing a talis. But in truth, it seems to be that the Magen Avraham is in favor of this position. So I think, you know, I think that if, you know, an individual asked me about this, I would say to them, absolutely, there's great precedent, you know, for you to wear a talis.
Right. So that analysis sits very well with me. I think certainly in a rabbinic capacity, but you're saying, of course, there's a good argument to be made even for someone who's not serving in a rabbinic capacity for a man to wear the talis. We're not even going to go down the woman rat over here. That's for another episode. Though I'm sure that's something that you'd love to address also, or maybe we'll have someone of that category come and speak about that. But something that really interests me, because we're living in very hyper-political times, is that you'll see many times at these certain political rallies from those who, let's just say, are not the most Shomer Torah of mitzvos. They're not exactly keeping every chumer of the Chazon Ish. They'll show up to these political rallies wearing talisim. Maybe there'll be rainbows on the talis. Maybe there'll be a chfeis nish. So on the one hand, I think we agree. I think everyone everyone would unanimously say that a talis adds a certain level of gravitas and identity. And that's why it's so important, and I think justified, like you said, for a rabbi to want to wear that so that they can get the proper kavod harav that they deserve. Though I do worry that because it's status symbol, it could also get abused by people who are even ironically sometimes arguing for things that are unequivocally against the Torah. Not every protest is unequivocally against it, but many times they're arguing for things that go against what explicit mitzvos or isurim are in the Torah. And, you know, do you ever see like the talis kind of gets abused? It gets what we call cultural appropriation. It gets culturally appropriated from what it was meant for, which is for religious service. Now they'll say they're walking with their feet or praying with their feet, whatever it is. And that is religious service. But, you know, if you go to a rally that's advocating against the mitzvah and the Torah, it's a little bit hard to say that on top of that, you should be wearing a talis as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the Talis has become an important, religious symbol in various social movements and protests. And you know, I think what makes it very unique is the fact that it, in and of itself, the Talis in the halakhic discussion has this social, symbol and prestige with it as well. So it's not only in, you know, in the movements and the protests itself, but even in the halakhic history and reception, you know, these ideas of symbolism is, you know, it, these ideas are there.
100%. Very diplomatic. I love that. It's okay. I don't want to throw you under the bus, Rabbi Marlow. I'll be the one with the controversial opinions. It's okay. With about 30 or so seconds left, Rabbi Marlow, I know you're doing amazing things for Klal Yisrael and you're doing a lot of teaching. How could our listeners continue to learn from you? Any other ideas you want to share with us in conclusion, and where can we go to learn more of your Torah ideas?
Amazing. If you'd like to learn more Torah with me, you can come to Harvard, and I'd love for more people to apply and to join us. Alternatively, you can go to Hawaii Torah, where I have other shiurim. And I'll just leave one more thought about this topic, which is
that your Twitter. You got to leave a Twitter handle.
Oh yeah, my Twitter handle. You can find me on Twitter. It's Tzveidinim. I talk about education, lumda, psychology, psychoanalysis.
The same way a modern Orthodox rabbi needs a podcast, one needs a Twitter, right? Okay, very
exactly.
Good.
Twitter or a podcast, you know. So if you really want to, if you want to find my Torah, I've got some Torah threads on Twitter as well, especially about Gemara, education, and pedagogy. So that's where you can find me. And I'd love to share more Torah and teach more about this topic.
All right, guys, if you're at a shul, bring Rabbi Marlow to your community to teach. There you go. I said it for you. All right. Rabbi Noah Marlow, Yasher Koach, thank you so much for sharing your personal experience, your erudition with us. And we look forward to seeing when the full article, because you have a lot of sources, clearly. I look forward to seeing the full article come out, God willing, b'mheir b'yameinu. All right. Take care. All the best. And God give you much strength in all that you're doing for Klal Yisrael. Take care, Rabbi Marlow. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.